Listener, we've partnered with Beer 52 to celebrate the Euros, to celebrate England reaching the final of the Euros. And you can order a free case of 8 unique craft beers to commiserate or celebrate whatever happens on Sunday. Just go to beer52.com/Euro2020 or use the code Euro2020 and just cover the postage costs of £5.95 to get your package. It's the world's largest beer club with over 178,000 active members, and each month you get sent a case on a different theme. It comes with a magazine and a snack. If you don't like dark beer, you can choose the light beer option. You can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. Just go to beer52.com/Euro2020 to get your pack of 8 free craft beers. Hello, and welcome to Inside the Euros. We're sorry we didn't power pod straight away. Yes, we were a bit hungover after England against Denmark, and I also tested positive for coronavirus, so that has also hampered the publications of these podcasts a little bit. But here we are, we're back, so look at the semi-finals and ahead to England against Italy on Sunday night at Wembley. With me is David Gibbs.
Hi, everybody.
And Joe Casanelli.
Hi, guys.
First, we decided to have a chat with Kieran Canning of the AFP, who went to the semi-finals and is going on Sunday to the final. Kieran, you must be nervous ahead of England potentially winning their first trophy for so many years.
First trophy of my lifetime, and yours. And yours, Gibbo. I think it's very 50-50 game. It's a hard one to call. I always felt that England would have too much for Denmark. That game was maybe a little bit closer than I thought it was going to be. But even throughout the tournament, being based in England, it's been a strange one. So normally we assume that the English are a bit brash and overconfident, the whole football's coming home thing. But actually throughout the tournament, I felt that English people be more nervous for them than I would be, for example, heading into the Ukraine game or even going into the Denmark game. A lot of people sort of feeling the ghosts of England past rather than actually judging the team that they've got at the moment and the players they've got at the moment. The fact they got to World Cup semi-final 3 years ago and now I think have a much better team. And on top of all that, they've obviously got the home advantage with a huge crowd. I mean, it's been a privilege to be at the two semi-finals, both because they were good games, but just the atmosphere there, that I don't know if it's because we've become so desensitized or so used to having empty stadiums, but it just, like, 60,000 in a 90,000 stadium sounds an awful lot louder than 90,000 ever did pre-pandemic. And I think part of that is the pandemic. People have been locked up for so long, they've now been let loose. Part of that is the euphoria in terms of the England games, of England's been here and been in the first major final for 55 years. And I would say England possibly slight favourites just based on that home advantage. It's a very close game, hard one to call, but I wasn't too impressed with Italy in the semi-final against Spain as well. Spain on the night certainly deserved to go through. You could argue Italy over the course of the tournament have deserved to be in the final, but should be a good game.
I was going to ask you about that Italy, because they weren't convincing at all, were they, against Spain? Although England won't be able to strangle the game and keep the ball as well as Spain did, because they're obviously experts in that. How do you see the battle in midfield going between England and Italy?
I think if Italy are going to win, that's the area they've got to win, because that's the area of the field you would look at and say they have the advantage in the player-for-player battle there, in terms of having one of the things England probably still don't have is a Verratti-type player who keeps the ball and dictates the play. Now, that was kind of completely taken away from them by Spain, by the way that they played with the false nine and Dani Olmo dropping in. But I think that does give a bit of a blueprint for England in terms of how they're going to win the game, because you saw Kane on Wednesday night have probably his best game of the tournament and playing the Kane way that he has all season in terms of dropping deep, turning, playing those balls in for Saka, for example, for the equalising goal, which is very similar to what he was doing early on in the season with Son at Tottenham when they had such a good relationship. I think you saw the way that Olmo played against Italy. Bonucci and Chiellini really don't like that, where the forward comes off them and then turns and runs at them. And, for example, when they played up against Lukaku, is one of the best strikers in the world in the quarterfinals, they were much more comfortable because it was a big physical presence up against them. Whereas with Spain, they kind of showed that if you pull them out of position and run them, and for example, if you can imagine a Saka or a Sterling getting the run on Bonucci and Chiellini and drag them out into wider areas, then England can have some joy. So I think, yeah, if Italy are going to win it, it's going to be they're going to dominate possession and dominate the midfield. But if England are to win, I can see the situation where they maybe don't have 50% possession, you know, but they take their chances on the counter-attack and use Kane dropping in to make the extra man sort of in the midfield along with Mount at the top of the midfield, and then using the pace of Sterling and Saka in behind.
What's it been like as a Scotsman living in London? Well, not living in London, but being in London through this, through the semi-finals, and obviously experiencing a lot of the joy around.
Yeah, it's been strange. I have this joke with my colleagues because I have a lot of Scottish, Welsh and Irish colleagues, who a lot of whom are much more fierce, shall we say, in their anti-English bias than I am. But no, I think you have to take, I mean, there's sporting rivalry and we can joke about it and everything, but yeah, I live in England. You know, so England's been good enough to me. I can't begrudge them. Can't begrudge them one trophy every 55 years. As long as we stay on that average, you know, as long as they don't go into becoming, as my fear is, you know, they do a Spain 2008, 2012, you know, because of the, I don't think they're as good as that team, but because of the players they've got, you know, they've arguably got a stronger bench than they have first 11 at the moment. So, you know, if the likes of Foden and Grealish and Saka and Sancho go on to become even stronger in 18 months' time or in 3 years' time at the Euros, you know, there's every chance that even if they don't win it on Sunday, for example, I do think that it seems like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity because it's the first time in 55 years and because it's on home soil. But I do kind of feel that England will be contending there or thereabouts for a number of tournaments to come. And I think it's been nice. We can have reservations, as I do, over the safety of allowing so many people into the stadium at the moment when coronavirus cases are rising rapidly in England. But it has been nice being just feeling that atmosphere and that noise and that joy. And you can feel the joy in people and being able to be out and having a good time. And that's very much, you know, the pandemic has delayed this tournament by a year. But in terms of the atmosphere, now you're in the final stages, or even actually throughout the whole tournament, you've seen it in different ways. And, you know, for example, Budapest with the full stadium, but even some of the places where there's been 20,000, 30,000, there's generally been good atmospheres because people are just grateful to be able to be back out in stadiums watching live sport. So, yeah, I think also as a journalist, you kind of have to, you want to be reporting on big stories and big storylines, and this is certainly one of them. I mean, I would compare this, it's not as much bigger, but for example, when we were out in Spain covering La Liga, like Real Madrid winning the Decima was a big thing because they'd waited so long for that sort of 10th European Cup. But again, you know, hopefully England don't do what Real Madrid did and then, you know, reel off. No, I wait so long for one, then reel off a load of trophies in one go. But yeah, as a journalist, it's good to be there, like, reporting on such a big event.
It's like that London bus, Kieran. I don't know if you saw it, of the England fan jumping on the side mirrors of the bus and deciding to partake in a little travel along the high road and stay on for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to... Two things to come back to as a Scotsman. Like, one is, even if England get into the final, it's still the second best party there's been in London of this tournament after the heroic goalless draw in the group stages. And if England win every game apart from the Scotland game, then surely it's only fair that we share the trophy.
Is this your nil-nil victory at Wembley?
No, glorious nil-nil victory, yeah.
As Gibbo said, I said to me before we started recording, actually, and you mentioned all the overcrowding or like lots of people together in the stadium. Gibbo told me that it was quite easy for people to get into the stadium just by dodging the turnstiles, going in like one after another and taking advantage like that.
Yeah, it was. I've had it from several accounts that it was very easy to get into the stadium. I mean, obviously we don't condone this behaviour, so but it was, the security was a lot less lax than it probably should have been. Getting into the stadium, that is.
It certainly felt in the stadium more than two-thirds full, I will say that. There was very few areas where you would look at and go, there's like gaps there. And even the official attendance was 65,000 when previously they'd announced that there's only going to be 60,000 allowed in. So,
I'm sure all the VIPs and celebrities somehow managed to get their tickets, didn't they?
Well, we already knew they were looked after, but yeah, it was more just the general fan areas that seemed very full to me. You know, we know that even in areas where they've put out social distancing between the seats and stuff like that, fans generally just sort of congregate together. Like, for example, the Champions League final, you saw that. But this just seemed like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't 90,000, but it seemed like a lot more than the official attendance of the 65,000. So, and also in terms of the safety and the crowding and stuff, I mean, they say they've used the reasoning for having such a large crowd because you can get in either as a kind of vaccine passport if you've had two shots of the vaccine, or you've taken a lateral flow test in the previous 2 days. But when the lateral flow tests are far from fully reliable, but also just on Wembley Way, for example, I'd go down Wembley Way to get into the stadium, and there was thousands, like so many more people than there would even be allowed into the state. There was loads of people who came to Wembley Way just to sample the atmosphere, and there was loads of people just drinking out in the streets and stuff like that. So you've got all those people as well on top of the ones that are in the stadium. I saw someone, you know, describe, I came out of Wembley both nights, probably about midnight, just 12:30, and particularly after the England game, they described the Wembley Way floor as being like that student union, very sticky floor at 3 a.m. You know, there's empty bottles everywhere. It's just like an absolute mess. So yeah, there are a lot of people celebrating and enjoying the atmosphere. And it's everywhere here. It's like, you can't listen to a radio station, put on a TV program, even if it's nothing to do with football. It's just, that's topic of conversation.
I think you're right there, Kieran, about the distancing and people outside. I mean, you know, I'm sure we've all been to several Champions League finals ourselves where they almost have an outer ring where you can't get in, and then it's still enough space around sort of before you even get to the concourse of the stadium. And Wembley doesn't have this. And, you know, as you mentioned, there's thousands of people down Wembley Way. And, you know, at one point it was getting quite busy. And obviously compare it to the Champions League finals where there is that sort of ring of security before, where if you haven't got a ticket, you can't get into this part. And then you need to get your ticket checked again before you can even get into the stadium or the concourse. So it makes sense there what you're saying.
All right, thanks very much, Kieran. Hello. Appreciate that. And I'm sad to say this because you are a good friend of mine, but I hope you're very sad on Sunday night.
Ah, well, I'll not be nearly as sad as Domin, so, you know, I'll have that.
Listeners might remember Martin Domin from the episode where I phoned him up and he was with his Scottish mates who were very drunk. Worth a listen if you go back and check that out, ahead of the England-Scotland game it was.
If you want to be like Rio Ferdinand and 3 weeks on, cast up to Scotland fans, you know, what they were saying to him on Twitter after the draw, then yeah, that's a good retro listen.
Joe, 50% English, 50% Italian. At least that's how you often like to play it. Where do your loyalties lie on Sunday?
On Sunday, well, I think we can safely say I'm a winner, whatever happens. I think we can put it like that. However, I'm obviously, you can hear my voice, and anyone who's ever seen me in person knows that I'm certainly got the more English genes than the Italian genes. So I think I'd have to say that my loyalties do lie with England. However, if Italy win, then it won't be the end of the world, I don't think.
No, and it's a pretty even, tight looking game, isn't it? It could be one of those, like, we saw both semi-finals go to extra time, and I can easily believe this one ends up going to extra time as well.
Yeah, well, I'm actually currently in Italy and on a post-Euros holiday. Some might say well-deserved, others would beg to differ, I'm sure. However, I'm here and I've been watching I watched the two games at a local bar, which is where I am now. So if you can hear any Vespers whizzing past, that's
just
why.
Did.
However, they were, yeah, well, it's a happy coincidence. But there were two really tight games, two really nervy games, I thought. I thought you could see exactly what was at stake for both England and Italy, and of course Spain and Denmark. And I thought that Italy actually didn't really do themselves much justice in that semi-final. I thought they were outplayed by Spain for large parts. You know, Kieran said he wasn't too impressed with Italy. And I agree with him. You know, for as good as they've been throughout the tournament, they left a lot to be desired, I think, in that game. And it would have given England a lot of encouragement. Having said that, you know, a Danish side who were without their talisman for obvious reasons and out on their feet after about minute 60 took England all the way in extra time. So I think it's going to be two tired sides playing against each other, and it's going to make for very interesting viewing. I'm very curious to see how Gareth Southgate matches up against Roberto Mancini tactically, because I think if there's been one criticism of Southgate, it's been his tactics and decision makings and in the biggest game against big opponents. And Germany aside, and you can argue, I know you, Rick, don't really rate Jogi Löw and thought Germany should have got rid of him long ago. You can argue that England haven't actually really had that many big games thus far in the tournament either. So this one will be very interesting.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it seems so obvious to say, but it's obviously the toughest game England will have faced at this tournament. The Germany game on paper could have been as tough as this, but Germany were pretty poor, to be honest. And not to mention that this is the final itself. And given that it's a final, obviously England have to stay calm and keep their heads. And they seem to be all right with that under Southgate. It doesn't seem like nervousness creeps in like it did into England teams in the past.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But having said that, this is an England team who they went behind to Denmark. And they really did. While they dominated possession and were the better side, England should be beating Denmark, and they should be beating Denmark a lot more comfortably than in 120 minutes. So I did think there was the odd, there was quite a few nerves, I think, especially from Jordan Pickford. You know, in the last podcast that I was on with you guys, I ate quite a lot of humble pie regarding Jordan Pickford. I'm a Liverpool fan as well, so I have certain club allegiances against him. But I thought he'd been really, really good for England at this tournament. But I thought you saw the Everton Pickford sort of creep back in the last game. You know, there's a couple of, you know, there was one where he rolled the ball straight to, I think it was Martin Brathwaite on the edge of the box. And then there was another time where he tried a chipped clearance and Casper Dolberg cut it out. And, you know, England were really lucky to get away with those things. I think if you do that against a team of Italy's quality, then you'll pay. And I think that that's maybe one side of the nervousness that we hadn't seen from England in the big games thus far that really did creep in. So that will be interesting to see how Jordan Pickford manages the pressure and how he manages the occasion, because that was the one criticism that was levelled at Joe Hart throughout his England career as well, wasn't it? You remember the Wales game at Euro 2016 when he lets in that Gareth Bale free kick. There was the Iceland game where he lets in a really sloppy goal. And people can also say that, you know, should he have saved that Damsgaard free kick? I'm probably on the side of he should have done better. And I think that if it's the other way around, I think that Gigi Donnarumma saves that. So I think it might come down to a battle of defences and goalkeepers. And I think you're probably backing the Italians when it comes down to that.
I think you're right about that free kick, because at first glance, it looked like it's a really special effort. And then seeing the replay, it was pretty central. And I feel like Pickford or any goalkeeper might have been able to do a bit better than he did and just let it go past him. Another player that has kind of, you have rated Joe from the start of the tournament, you even picked him to be in the team of the tournament, I think, was Chiesa from Italy. And he started off out of the team, you know, didn't play much in the group stage, only the third game against Wales. But in the second half of the tournament, he's played an absolutely key role, and he seems to have earned that spot on the right-hand side ahead of Berardi now. So him against Luke Shaw, what do you make of that battle?
It's going to be interesting. You were very right to point that out, Rick. I did pick Chiesa in my team of the tournament. And, you know, formerly of this parish, Vieri Capretta pointed out that he probably wouldn't start. But I stuck with my guns, and I'm pleased that I did. And I think that Mancini's really managed it well. He's brought Chiesa in, and when Chiesa's sort of caught a bit of fire, he's kept him in the team, which is really smart man management, I think. But Luke Shaw has been one of England's better players as well. So I think that's going to be a really key battle, because you saw that against Spain, they looked to use Chiesa as the outball a lot of the time. There was obviously Immobile, who does a lot of hard work, but Chiesa is quite often the guy picking the ball up on the edge of the box, in and around that area, and that obviously resulted in Italy's goal, which put them in the lead. I think that the key battles are going to be out wide. I think that Italy themselves need to worry about Bukayo Saka, with Emerson Palmieri of your club Chelsea, having not really played much at all this season, and now sort of thrown into a Euro semi-final and now final, is going to be another key battle as well. So I think that maybe the left backs or the left wing backs against the right forwards is going to be a key battle for this game going forward, certainly. I think that Chiesa may struggle against Luke Shaw, just because I've seen Luke Shaw in very big games for Manchester United, against, you know, like the likes of Liverpool and Chelsea, even against Villarreal in the Europa League final. He's managed to shackle some really tough opponents quite well. He's always dealt with Mo Salah brilliantly. You know, he didn't really give Villarreal a sniff. I know that Villarreal took the lead, but that was from a set piece in that final. So he's a really strong player, and he's come into his own this season and particularly into this tournament. So I can see Luke Shaw shackling Chiesa. I say this, and they watch Chiesa have him on toast and score a hat-trick from that right forward position now. But I think that Italy will have it more difficult in that sense, because I think that Saka up against Emerson, and then obviously if Saka's not having any joy, well, there's Phil Foden, there's Jack Grealish, you know, there's so many players that England can bring on in that position who could just do a job on him, especially, you know, he's tired. He came off against Spain, didn't he? Because he was, you know, essentially he's not unfit, but he's lacking match practice, I think would be the football manager term.
Do you think it may be a case of that it's going to be the substitute bench which will possibly win the game for either side?
Yeah, it could be. I think that England have the stronger bench, certainly on paper, if not in reality. I think it would be, as I said, you know, defence will be key. There'll be caginess on either side. And while we have sort of lauded this Italy for not being like the Italy sides of old, with the Catenaccio, they are a side who against Spain showed that they can shut up shop and keep it very tight. And England, if anything, have played the more Italian-style football at this tournament. So I think it could come down to, you know, fresh legs off the bench and late substitutes. I think in that sense, England certainly have the edge. And, you know, I personally think that England will win. And I think it might be a bit more comfortable than people think it will be. Again, kiss of death. Watch Italy be rampant and smash England. But I liken it to, and I'm sure Kieran will like this anecdote, is when Andy Murray, he got to a couple of Wimbledon finals and not really done all that well. He'd lost them, but then he got to the 2012 Wimbledon final. He played against Novak Djokovic, had that experience of missing out and getting to the business end of it. And then he just absolutely whacked him in straight sets and didn't give him a sniff. And I think that England might do that to Italy.
It's a big, big claim, and one I hope comes true. And I can see it, but I can also see Italy being basically as good as they have been at the start of the tournament, and the Spain game just being a blip, because Spain, as I said with Kieran, they play in a very different way to any other team really at the tournament. So it was difficult for Italy to handle, whereas England are much more their speed, a team much easier to handle. And no, you know, England haven't, apart from Ukraine, England haven't overrun anyone in this tournament.
Yeah, don't forget about Austria as well, Rick, when, you know, that went to extra time, and that was, again, that was tough for the Italians. So I think definitely it'll come down to sort of emotion as well, with the tournament. The England fans are 100% going to be the 12th man. Having been there on Wednesday, the atmosphere, we mentioned it earlier, was Gary Neville said it was the best atmosphere he's experienced since potentially Euro 96, even better than that. And the fans are going to play a massive, massive part in this. And I think there's 8,000, 9,000 Italians are planning to be there based in the UK. The rest will be full of English, and it's going to be some spectacle.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say with that is that I certainly hope the English fans who are there don't boo the national anthem of Italy. I mean, it's happened all tournament, and I know it's kind of done to get under the skin of players and that kind of thing, but I just think it's really disrespectful, and especially in a final, I think that you want to be allowing that to go ahead without any interruptions. And I think that all three of us here can agree it is an absolute belter. And Gary Lineker said that on Twitter as well. He said that, you know, let's all listen to the Italian national anthem. Not only is it disrespectful to boot, but it's a great national anthem as well. And I think that we could say, well, I personally think it's a lot better than the English one. So I quite like for the fans to at least be in good behaviour for that, if they're not getting right on the back of the Italians from the off when the game actually starts. And like I said, I just think that with the crowd behind them, with the momentum, because I know, again, this could just all be the most ridiculous statements ever made, but it's like in that Wimbledon final, and I keep equating it to a tennis match that took place 9 years ago. So, I mean, this is almost, you know, even by my standards, I'm chatting complete baloney here. However, I just think that what happened in that was the crowd was so behind and so partisan towards Murray that they then just completely, Djokovic didn't know how to react, and it knocks him out of his stride. And I think that may well be the case this time round with Issy. I know they've got a lot of experienced heads, but they've also got some young players in there, some players who've never really been in at the business end of especially an international tournament. So that could knock them out of their stride. They could maybe not know how to react to that. And I think that, you know, if you get on their backs and maybe with the fact that they've been playing in front of empty stadiums for so long, it could really have a really positive effect for England and a negative effect for Italy, who are, you know, essentially the away side, even though they'll have a decent number of fans there.
Let's not give the Italians any more motivation to want to do well by booing their anthem. As you said, it's a fantastic anthem. Let's go out there, do our thing, and enjoy the game, and, you know, let the footballers do the talking.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Gibbo. And, you know, Italy, when it's come down to letting the football do the talking, you'd say that they've actually, you know, certainly talked the talk in this Euro a lot more than Ukraine aside from England. You know, Italy against Belgium was one of probably the best individual team performance of the tournament, I'd say. The fact that they just completely overran the Belgians in attack in the first half and then put in, you know, such a dogged, tenacious defensive display in the second really was a sight to behold. I was there at that game in Munich. It was the last game I was at during this Euros, and it was a brilliant one to finish on. And when they won that, you sort of thought, you know, this Italy team really does mean business and can go all the way. And obviously, from a sort of non-neutral point of view, you hope that isn't the case, and you hope that maybe this is just one hurdle too far for them. But they won't need any more motivation, as you say, Gibbo. They're just a side who, on their day, can beat anyone. And Sheridan Bird, friend of the podcast, said to us that, you know, he thought Chiellini and Bonucci maybe had one big last swan song performance in them, but we maybe need to hope that that came against, you know, against Lukaku and against Spain, and then that the likes of Raheem Sterling, who's in the form of his life, you'd have to say, certainly in an England shirt, and Bukayo Saka and Harry Kane, will maybe just their movement and their directness will just prove a little bit too much for the old dogs at the back with Italy.
So, Joe, we've heard your prediction, your tennis match comparisons, everything. What scoreline are you going for then?
I'm going to stick to the tennis analogy, Rick, and go for a 3-0 straight set victory to Harry Kane and co.
I was expecting like a 6-1 or something then, when you said that, stick to the tennis analogy.
Not quite. Maybe a sets result rather than the set itself result.
Gibbo?
I think Joe's been on them Ignusos and Moretti's a bit in Italy. I'm going to be a bit more conservative. I think England are going to do it. I said 2-1 in the last game, and I'm going to go 2-1 again for an England victory. Maybe even extra time. An extra time win.
Yeah, I think it's going to extra time. I'm going to say 1-1, extra time, and then 117th minute, Harry Kane nets the winner, 2-1 to England as well.
England like to go to extra time finals, shall we say. So why not keep the tradition?
Yeah, as I said, well, as I'm sure Italians will point out, and Kasper Schmeichel as well. Oh yes, all those finals that England have been in and gone to extra time in. The one final, well, it is 100% record anyway. The only thing I would say is that, you know, sort of, there was a lot of high horse behaviour from the English press and England fans after, you know, Italy, to use, for want of a better phrase, shithoused their way past both Belgium and then Spain in their time wasting and their, you know, their theatrics, you know, the Immobile going down to try and win a penalty. And then as soon as Barella's goal hit the back of the net, you know, he was up like Usain Bolt out of the traps as a 100-metre sprinter to run off and celebrate with him. And I think after that, you know, after Raheem Sterling's soft, shall we say, penalty the other night, I'd certainly hope that a contentious decision doesn't decide this game. But if it does, I hope that from either side, people will just accept it's a part of the game. I wouldn't want Italy to get a soft penalty and that for, you know, all English fans and the English media to say, this is a disgrace, look at what's happened. They're diving, they're cheating foreigners. You know, this line that's been towed a lot over the years, I think maybe less so in recent times. And, you know, when they're foreign, they're divers, and when they're English, they're streetwise. But likewise, if England was to get another questionable penalty like Raheem Sterling got against Denmark, I'd hope that the Italians would maybe say fair play and doff their cap to him and say, you know, if that was us, we'd have done the same, and good on you and congratulations.
Well, it is the same VAR team that was at the England-Denmark who will be in charge for the final.
Oh, well, that's interesting. But I mean, I don't know about you guys, and I know we're going off on a slight tangent here, but I think it was one of those grey area decisions, which is, to bring another sport into it, cricket. It's like an umpire's call where there wasn't any compelling 100% evidence to say, no, you need to overturn that decision because it's wrong. I thought it's one of those that if he doesn't give it, the VAR doesn't say to him, that's a penalty. But I also think if, you know, he gives it, there's not enough evidence to say, you know, go and change your mind. And I think that the same happened when Harry Kane went down earlier in the game, when there was a sort of a coming together. It was one of those of, you know, referee didn't give it. If he'd have given it, I don't think it'd have been overturned. But likewise, when it's not given, it shouldn't be overturned. And I have to say that I think the referees, for the large part of this tournament, have been very, very, very good. And I think that, and I hope that the Premier League certainly moving forwards can learn from it, because a lot of the VAR decisions have been very quick, which is what you want to see. You don't want 4 or 5 minute delays while millimetric offsides are measured or decisions are reviewed and reviewed and reviewed 100 times in slow motion, just looking for that one tiny little piece of evidence that could lead to it being overturned.
Yeah, I think you're right. But on the penalties, I would have said the Sterling one for me is not, the Kane one for me is, and ultimately England had expected penalties of one and they got one penalty. So there's not too much to complain about for Denmark.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I also think it was a really nervous penalty from Harry Kane. I think it was a bad penalty, and I actually think Kasper Schmeichel should have done better with it, given how poorly it was struck and the fact he got, you know, he got both hands to it, but he pushed it straight back to Kane. And I think that, you know, we spoke, you know, you mentioned before that England didn't look nervous. Well, I think that's more evidence of England, you know, maybe feeling the occasion. Now, I think if, you know, you'd certainly back Harry Kane to score a penalty, especially after having just missed one. But, you know, if Harry Kane, England's leader, you know, the best player essentially does that, are the other guys going to be feeling it if it goes to a penalty shootout? That's the big question. I think that the answer to that is yes. And I think we saw the Italians against Spain, if it does go down to penalties, are certainly a lot more cooler customers in that sense.
But what we have learned is that teams that have 2 penalty shootouts in a row usually lose the second one. So if it does go to penalties, that'll be bad news for Italy.
Very true, very true. And England have, if I'm not mistaken, won their last 2 international tournament penalty shootouts in the World Cup and the Nations League. So, you know, it's coming home.
Listener, thanks for sticking with us. Look forward to seeing you after the final. And we'll also have a pod to review the tournament as a whole. Remember to check out our Beer 52 offer, one of the last chances to get this free crate of craft beer.